It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. It's going to be an hour. I'm just looking through my stuff thinking we should do two, but we're only going to do one. But anyway, I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we are here in the studio as usual, ready and raring to go. Lot to talk about. A lot of it's fun. Those of you who are bothering to listen to a financial show probably have some idea that this was just kind of a really fun week.
It was a fun week. It has followed several fun weeks.
Yes.
It's been a fun 4 months, really.
Yeah, and wasn't that long ago that we didn't sound at all like that.
No, it was a rough third quarter, but man, have we bounced back strong.
It's a real lesson in patience, and knowing what the right thing to do isn't necessarily the same thing as being able to tolerate doing the right thing. And most often, if you get over your fears and nerve and just let the market do its thing, you find out that you're better off. And if there's one thing that's been consistent in our years in this business, it's having to talk people down off the ledge every once in a while.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And we're not always successful at that either.
No, not always.
As much as we can be.
Yeah, we've had a pretty good
track record, but we've had a few where we just couldn't. And what's happened every time?
Every single time, the next morning, it reverses and starts up.
Almost 100%. And it's amazing how that feeling of like it'll never get better and the bottom coincide with each other.
Exactly. We used to laugh once in a while because we had a couple of people who were pretty predictable that way. And when the market opened really bad and we're in a really bad period, I mean, to the point where we're wondering ourselves quietly, you know, how long is this going to be? Then the phone would ring in the office and we'd both look at it and say, I know who it is.
Yep.
It never works out that well. On the other hand, who can blame somebody for the feelings that they have? Like, oh my God, I've spent my whole life doing this. But if you look at the numbers and watch the markets, you know what the right thing to do is, and we'll help you if we can.
Yeah. If you need any proof of that, just go back and pull a 30-year chart of the S&P and try and find 2008. And it's actually, you'll find it, but it's not,
look.
It's pretty insignificant.
And you know what else? Even there's another chart, a parallel chart for the NASDAQ. It's no different.
Nope.
If you've got 20, 30 years, if you're a young person and you don't understand that, then you should start learning right away. Do things like listening to this show and working with an advisor. And you got to learn to help yourself, because nobody's going to do it for you. And in fact, when you use your heart instead of your head, you're more likely to make a mistake. So, you know, I'm going to be talking a lot about young people over the next few weeks. And on the 16th, Adam's not going to be here, so we're getting Christine Kennedy, the mortgage broker. And Christine is going to concentrate on young people. Let's face it, it's hard enough now for a grown-up to get a mortgage that matches the house they want because the rates have gone up so high. Young people that we've always talked about have a lot on their plates no matter what. It's even harder now to get into a home for them. So we're going to just think young for the month of March, I thought. You know, springtime is when things are turning and blossoming and all that stuff. I think it's a good time to pay attention to young people. We'll see how it goes.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right, this week.
Yeah, so somehow the Dow managed to lose 44 points, but that was the only good or only bad news of the week. Everything else, more or less, was good news. The S&P was up almost 1%. The NASDAQ, which is still riding that AI wave, was up another 1.7, and it closed at a new all-time high on Thursday and then again on Friday. That was the one remaining index. Well, I shouldn't say that. The Russell hasn't closed at an all-time high, but
it did make a 52-week high, though.
Yes, but it is still pretty far off of its all-time. But the NASDAQ, the S&P, and the Dow have now all hit new all-time highs. So that was nice to see, and just a very good confirming sort of day.
By anybody's reckoning now, anyone who doubts that we're in a full-blown bull market I don't know what they're thinking.
No, I mean, by almost every measure you can think of, we are solidly in a bull market. Despite that really strong performance that we've seen out of the NASDAQ too, and the fact that it hadn't been at an all-time high was kind of surprising because, man, it's just been on an absolute tear. So that was good to see. Since the October low, the S&P has added more than 1,000 points in 4 months. In the financial crisis, it bottomed out around 676, if you can believe that. It's now over 5,000. That's how strong the market's been. Of course, that means we're seeing some short-term overbought conditions, and we haven't even seen a 2% pullback in the since the October lows, which is really incredible.
Yeah, that number, you're 676?
Yeah.
That's strangely close to 1983 in August, when the market was about at that. Only we weren't talking about the NASDAQ.
Talking about the Dow.
That was the Dow.
Yeah.
And that has been, if you add them up, not that many years.
No.
And it's now, it's just barely having to tilt up to see a number that I don't think any of us thought would happen very soon. But we're almost at 40,000.
Yeah, that's true. My point of bringing all that up was, if you do see a 2, 5, 10% pullback, from a technical perspective, it's barely even going to damage the current uptrends. So do not be worried if we see some selling next week. I would almost expect it at this point. But
yeah, look at the year-to-date numbers. We got a good year already.
We do. We could just stop right here and take the gains.
Yeah, just take the rest of the year off.
February was such a strong month worldwide that it was difficult to even find any asset classes that were down in the month. There were a few, though. Fixed income was down. The AGG, the ETF that tracks the aggregate bond market, it was down about 1%. And that was mainly just due to expectations that the Fed was going to cut rates sooner. Those expectations have really pushed back, and they're not expecting anything till later this year. And so you're seeing interest rates kind of – they haven't moved a whole lot, but they've moved enough to just take a little bit off of the bond market. That's going to reverse at some point this year, almost certainly. Another area that struggled, this will not surprise anyone who listens to the show, it was natural gas. It was down over 16% in February, continuing its dramatic fall over the last year. Spain and Mexico both saw small declines in February, but generally international ETFs did great. Israel was up 9.7% and China was up 6.6%. The all world except U.S. index was up 4.5% and emerging markets were up 5.5%. And then all 10 sectors of the S&P were up in February, consumer discretionary led the way with an 8.4% gain. That is not something you see when we're heading into recession.
And look at the news out of Israel. And you think, really?
Mm-hmm.
A 9%?
It had been beaten up
when
the war started. But so
I don't see anything getting much better over there.
No, I mean, I think it's just... it hasn't gotten a lot worse, so maybe that's why.
Maybe that something will work its way out one of these days, I guess. But wow, what a performance. All right, we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more on the market and other things. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I remind everybody that lines are open, 904-222-8255. And if you give us a call, we will put you on air and answer your questions, talk about whatever you want to talk about. Or you just have to put up with us for the next 45 minutes or so, which shouldn't be that hard.
There are worse punishments, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. We do have a trivia question, as usual, brought to you by Ken Bales of First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. Today's topic is generosity. And there was a recent case of that. A lot of you probably read about the Albert Einstein School of Medicine got a rather significant donation of a mere $1 billion, which it is using to fund tuition-free education for medical students.
Hmm.
Yeah, forever. Remember when Ken Langone did that in New York? Well, now this one has followed suit. Her name is Dr. Ruth Gotsman, and her husband was an early investor with Berkshire Hathaway and got extremely wealthy. She's 93, and she was a professor and appreciates education. So she has given them, out of the estate, $1 billion. And I want to know, because the idea here, she said in her $1 billion gift, the idea was to fund in perpetuity the educations for the students there for no tuition. What rate of return would they have to make on that $1 billion to fund that? And I'll take it within a reasonably tolerant range. And which kind of, I've got the number here, what we'll take. I'm not going to tell you because I don't want it to hone in too much on giving you the answer up front. But what rate of return would you have to get on the $1 billion to fulfill her wish?
Okay.
All right. Well, back to the market this week.
Yeah.
By the way, I wanted to make a comment. As Caitlin Clark might say, records are made to be broken.
Apparently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was a good one that she.
Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen anything like that?
She's really good.
That's, from the key or the side or whatever.
Draining three points.
And she, I've NBA never even seen her hit the rim.
Yeah, she's good.
This is unbelievable. I think what she got, something like 18 or 28 points left to get Pistol Pete.
Something like that, yeah.
Want to bet she'll do it?
One game.
One game left.
Yeah. As recently as a couple months ago, the market was pricing in no less than 7 rate cuts this year. Personally, I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah, but we've mentioned that several times.
That's what it was. Now it's pricing in 4 rate cuts, and briefly, that number was 3 last week. Honestly, I think 3 is closer to reality. That's just an opinion. I would prefer none. I like higher interest rates.
I do, too.
I
makes our life easy.
Yeah, it makes savings fun again. I've had at least 3 people in the last week thank me for telling them to move their money to a high-yield savings account, because they've all made more money in 1 month than they did all of last year. If you have money sitting in a bank right now, look at your rate of return and then check out American Express or Capital One or any of the other reputable high-yield savings account companies, and think about moving your money over. You're going to make north of 4% most likely, and you probably will not be disappointed. Just kind of a money tip for the week. But if you think about that, why are you able to do that? People think it's like, when I tell them about it, people think it's a scam or it's a teaser rate. Or
no,
interest rates have moved. That's why mortgages cost so much right now. Mortgage rates are much higher than they were, and that's the downside of it. Borrowing is more expensive, but you can also make a lot more money on your money. Yeah.
This reminds me of something we haven't brought up for a while, but we did when rates were first starting to rise. There are a lot of people out there with CDs that they got a while back. And a lot of those CDs are at 0.8, 1, 1.2, 1.5. And they don't want to cash them in because of the penalty.
Well, that penalty is probably 2 or 3 months of interest, which is almost nothing.
Which it wouldn't get you a Big Mac meal.
Right. And then... then you replace that with a 5% CD, and you're probably going to earn that penalty back in a month.
Yes, and I think rates are, I wouldn't say they've absolutely peaked, but I think they're probably at a reasonable version of high for the next few months.
Close to the peak of the current cycle, very close to it.
If I had a 1, 2, 3, 4 year CD and is paying under about 2, I'd be very, very reluctant not to trade it in and just pick the best of the bunch that fits your time frame for potentially needing the money. But don't forget those CDs that are lying around, just like your savings accounts and your checking accounts, are costing you a bundle in lost opportunity.
So outside of being an election year, what would be the justification for rate cuts right now? I really don't see any justification for a rate cut right now. I don't know why the market is pricing it in. Now, if you think we're headed into recession, that would justify it. Absolutely. But there's not much right now that says that is the case.
It's only one thing I could find this week, and that is the amazing number of companies that are cutting jobs by the hundreds, thousands, and tens of thousands.
The Fed's goal was to get to soften the employment market, and they've done it, and it's not in an alarming way yet. So that could happen. But companies cutting fat right now is probably a good thing.
Yeah, and I'm thinking the reason there's such a disconnect between like the national numbers, the stock market, and individuals, because 42% of people say they're not better off, they're worse off than they were 1 year ago today. And a lot of them could be the people that are being laid off. They could know people, could be their kids. They might just see it and get disappointed.
I think it's the inflation. It's inflation.
I think that's the biggest problem, too.
Yeah, I'm got a 5% raise, but everything costs 17% more. That
exactly.
doesn't help me.
Yep.
And I think that's the reason for the sort of malaise in the in people right now. And but that still, none of that is a reason to cut rates. So
no.
In fact, when we're still seeing
reason not to.
I mean, inflation is way, way down. We all know that it's not going up like it was a year or 2 years ago, but it's still here. And so if you cut rates, you could actually see inflation reaccelerate and start to take off again. That would be a disaster. Well, right,
the Fed
now.
Would have egg on its face real deep and baked on at that point. They cannot allow this to go backwards in their own minds anyway, and in mine. They shouldn't.
No.
Things are not bad out there. And Angela was talking, I was listening on the way in, she was talking about mortgage rates and what they were back into last year, like 7.22. And they're not that high now. I think the level they've arrived at now seems kind of reasonable.
Historically, we still have low interest rates.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you look at a 30-year chart of interest rates. We're on the lower end of that chart right now.
And as you said, the people like our clients and other old people, middle-aged people, young kids saving up for things, you can put it in something now where it's going to be fixed and your return is going to be significant on it.
Yep.
It'll help you.
When you
can de-risk and make money, it's a good thing.
Do I love my mortgage? Yes.
Oh, me too.
I absolutely do. Would I trade it for being able to make money on my money? Whew, that's a tough one.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. But if you're just now, let's say you're graduating college and starting to look at the world, you just have to adjust your mentality to 6.5% mortgage and a 5% return on your money.
Yeah, and your parents paid
14%.
Just consider yourselves lucky and go for it.
Yeah, it is a mindset shift that has to be made, but I'll tell you, I'm on board with it now. Like if I bought a new house, I'd be okay with it.
And it would only be because you found the perfect situation.
Right.
If you've got a perfectly good place to live and a perfectly good mortgage, I'm not going anywhere yet, and I'm not going to give my mortgage holder a dollar bill that they can lend out at 2.5 times the rate they're charging
me. Nor am I. So, but anyways,
silly.
It's just interesting that 7 rate cuts were priced in this year. I don't understand it. I really don't.
It's more wishful thinking than actual common sense.
We've gotten so addicted to zero interest rates. It's kind of, I hope we can wean off of them or figure out how to get cured.
Well, look what happened. We were talking about this last week. Look what happened in Japan. They went to zero interest rates, and they went negative interest rates, and not a damn thing in Japan got any better. So what did they do? They held on and renewed it and renewed it and renewed it, and nothing got better. Come on, people. The old-fashioned version of insanity is just watching their economy flounder like that, and now they're getting off the ground again, but that's 3 decades. I think it was 34 years.
Between all-time highs.
Lost. Just absolutely lost. Talk about opportunity cost. That's a lot of should have been wealthy people that aren't.
Many other problems there, though. They have not adjusted to modern life in the way that a lot of other countries have. They still have almost no foreigners. They don't allow immigration. Their population is shrinking. The adults have like less than one kid. It's not a good recipe for growing a developed nation.
No, and where it's going to go will depend on whether or not they decide they're going to develop some flexibility. That's the one thing that Americans have always been good at, is we're very flexible. You run into a wall, you turn around, go a different direction.
Definitely.
That's why the markets always seem to outperform what people think should be or what is actually going on, because overall they know that if you pick the best companies and the best place in the world to live, those people are going to figure out how to make some money, and ultimately profit drives the market. So that's one of the reasons we remain so optimistic through even the worst of times. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with all kinds of other topics coming up. So we'll see you then. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we do have the trivia question open, as well as the phone lines, 904-222-8255. What percent return annually will be required by the trustees of Albert Einstein Medical School in order to make the Gottesman's $1 billion gift last in perpetuity for free tuition for everybody who can get in there? And by the way, it's already a bear to get into that place. Imagine how bad it's going to be with that kind of competition. Yeah.
No kidding. I
mean, you study hard, people, if you're thinking of that one.
You better be the best of the best.
Well,
but that's who you want going into the medical field. Yeah, so.
Well, that's true. Absolutely true. And don't be choosing them by other things. Enough said. Speaking of such things, Google, a company that I have gradually over a long, long time been losing respect for many, many reasons. Yet for as brilliant as the startup was and the whole development of the search process and everything, they were really first class. But now that they're involved in AI, which I have not seen many things that I would call a worse launch than Gemini. Can you?
No, it's actually, I think it's so funny. It's just hilarious.
You almost have to laugh or you cry.
It's so just, I don't know.
It they called it an overreaction.
It sums up many things that are wrong with the world today.
You know, I'm not the world's biggest fan of John Roberts, Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice. But he said something not that long ago that was absolutely brilliant. He said, the best way to end racial discrimination is to stop discriminating on the basis of race.
That makes a lot of sense.
And hear that, Google? Anyway, I'm not going to complain without doing something about it. I have been using the DuckDuckGo search engine rather than the Google search engine for a few years now. It is free, and it does not track you like the others do. And my wife's been on it too, my research assistant. And she went back a week or so ago and tried Google again to see, you know, is it maybe better or anything like that. I think she lasted 4 days and said, nope, right back to DuckDuckGo.
What, so, it's just the same, or close to the same, or what's
it? It works almost identically, but okay. It doesn't track everywhere you've been.
Okay.
So if you want to de-Googleize your life, there are some ways that you can get rid of your history. There's some manual and some automatic ways to do it. But you can change it right in, even if you're using Chrome, which some of us have to because that's really what our business software is designed to do. But you can change that search engine to default to DuckDuckGo, and it's just as easy as it could be.
So all right.
I recommend it from personal experience. It seems to work just fine. Just a little aside. All right, let's talk about crony capitalism for a minute.
Okay.
Does Panera Bread ring a bell?
I'm familiar with the company.
Okay. Are you familiar with the minimum wage law in California?
Oh, yeah, I did hear about this. Yep.
Yeah. Well, seemingly, all the fast food restaurants in California are about to bump up to a $20 an hour minimum wage that will then be increased to $22, except one.
Interestingly enough, also, I think orders for computer ordering systems are up 200-300% in California. Imagine that.
Who knew?
Yeah. Self-service kiosks, that's what I meant.
Yeah, in California, there is a guy who owns a bunch of Panera Breads. And he just happens to be a major contributor to Gavin Newsom's campaign.
It's so weird.
Who would have thought? A businessman, who knew? So somehow, in all of the, Newsom refers to it as the sausage making of law, somehow this $20 minimum wage for fast food workers carved out a little exception for people who bake and sell bread.
Weird.
It is, isn't it? And guess who makes and sells bread?
So I think Panera.
I think you're right.
I also have a question. Is this going to benefit them or not? Because who is going to take a job for $15 an hour at Panera if you can go to McDonald's and make 20?
You sound just like your mother.
I don't
That's
see,
a good thing.
I don't see how this is a good thing for them. I really don't. No, I think they're going to end up paying $20 an hour to everyone.
And when you make law on the basis of one person or a small handful of people, just think Terry Schiavo, people. It is never a good idea. Laws should be passed for the masses. You live with the consequences. You can always change the law. But it's just incredible to me that he contends that there was nothing personal about this, and yet that little exception was written in. Mm-hmm. It just happened to fit Panera to a T.
I just don't. I think it's going to have the opposite of the desired effect.
Yeah, I agree. Let's turn the tables a little bit. Sometimes government does something good, and we have an example for you. There has been introduced into Congress by a couple of liberal senators, no less, to allow a lot more things in our business, the financial service business, to be done by electronics. And I think that's wonderful. There's so many ways that the DocuSigns and the technology now is so different than it was 10 years ago. And we
had to fax something last week.
Yeah,
fax. Exactly. We didn't even know how. I'm not
weird,
kidding.
I know. And anyway, the reason that the fax was like that, back, if you remember, George H.W. Bush signed into law, this goes back to the early 90s, mm-hmm. that made fax signatures legal.
Yeah.
What we call wet signatures, which means original. The fax was the only method you could use to have that count.
Which at the time was a huge time and money saving
exactly.
thing for business, because prior to that you had to courier or
yep.
mail or do something to get a wet signature back and forth, taking days. So that cut it down to seconds.
But this is an excellent proposal. And some people asked, well, what about the people, some of them older, some not, who just don't like to do all that? All you got to do is opt out. They got it right. And even, I'll even give you a name or two. Hickenlooper from Colorado and Tillis from North Carolina. And I said they're both liberals. One's a Democrat, one's a Republican. They're both liberals.
Okay. Well, that's, I like that though.
Yes, but they deserve credit. And they're getting it from me. So hopefully this trend will just keep on going. You would think that everybody would be on board with this.
Yeah.
Because there's just no, maybe Fred Schultz isn't. He does all the moving around of the documents on the FedEx. But other than that, I think it's brilliant, well done, and I'm very pleased about
all right.
that. Now, what next? Guess who's going to own half the houses in America pretty soon? It's a group of people.
Like private equity or something?
No, it's individuals, but 60-plus years old.
Oh, boomers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Boomers are going to have half of the market now. And there's a lot of speculation as to why and how this is developing. And one of the things I read that I thought made a little bit of sense was most boomers got into their homes before the affordability crisis, because that's what we're really trying to concentrate on these days. The affordability crisis in housing is keeping a lot of younger people out. But it shouldn't, and they shouldn't worry about it. As you were saying, give it time to work its way out, and it's going to be fine.
Well, the other thing is, there's an affordability crisis centered around certain areas, big cities. But if you go to a rural area, you are not seeing that.
No.
So it really depends on where you want to live. And with the remote working trend, there are lots of options to get into the housing market. Now, that if you want to move to New York, you're gonna there's an affordability crisis sure.
Of course, if you want to move to New York, you got other problems.
Well, that's a personal decision, but it's I don't know that. I understand why you would say that is a crisis, but I just think that there are other there's going to be other trends that develop because of this, and I think one of them is less people relocating to major cities, especially if you can work anywhere in the world.
I think one of the best counters to this thing is definitely the whole reaction to COVID with the remote work capability.
Definitely. Saw the whole country reshuffled where they live.
Yeah. And think about how difficult remote work would have been 10 years ago and how simple it is today for so many people.
Oh, yeah. I think more of my friends work remotely than on site these days.
It's not even unusual anymore. And think about all the savings and gasoline and tires and just work clothes, time, commuting time is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. So I'm all for it. Except where there's some valid reason to be in the office, and there are plenty of those also. I'd like to see more government workers show up once in a while in the office just to see if they're really real. But that's personal, too. But the one thing I disagreed with in this whole thing is not that because of the researchers, it's because of the people. Only 15% of people over 60 say they're willing to tap the equity in their house to live happily ever after financially. And I thought, wow, that's really low.
That is really low.
And the reverse mortgages got off to such a bad start, and the HELOCs are not particularly good either, because every 10 years they might just take it away from you. But the reverse mortgage is just such an ideal situation for anyone who wants to fun part of the retirement with their home.
The HELOCs don't work too, because you have to pay them back. It doesn't make sense in that scenario.
Right, and the whole idea of the reverse is it doesn't. So I'm thinking, marshaling people out there, you got to keep working, because it can only get better. We'll take one more break and we'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And one more reminder, lines are open, 904-222-8255. What rate of return will the Albert Einstein School of Medicine need to earn to fund all of their future students all the way through med school tuition-free?
With $1 billion contribution.
And I will give you a little hint. It's doable.
Okay.
How about that?
Nice.
All right. Who am I?
I've got a surprise. I haven't done one of these in a long time, but I wanted to go back and revisit our millionaire segment, is what I call it. This is the 22nd one I've done. It is a segment about realizing the American dream. It's someone who came from humble beginnings and made it big, and it's usually due to a little bit of luck, but mostly a great idea, some incredible work ethic, and just a real drive. And so it kind of illustrates that the American dream is still possible. And this is a good one. I really like this one. I've been sitting on it, but it's a good one.
And I have no idea, by the way. I didn't ask and didn't want to.
So this African-American woman was born in 1977 in Middletown, Connecticut, but moved to Ghana when she was 6 months old. She lived in Ghana for 5 years, then moved to Nairobi, Kenya, then to Washington, D.C. Her family then settled in Colorado Springs when she was 12 years old. After high school, she studied English and African-American studies at Wesleyan University, which landed her a job at Arnold Worldwide, an advertising agency headquartered in Boston. In 2000, she moved over to Spike DBB, the advertising firm owned by filmmaker Spike Lee, and became a senior account executive. This is when people really started to notice the work she was doing. In 2005, she was offered the job of senior marketing manager at PepsiCo. It was up to her to set up the music and entertainment marketing department to market brands at concerts and festivals. She managed several brands working with Pepsi with the portfolio during her time there. In 2014, she got the opportunity to join Beats Music, which was purchased by Apple shortly after that. Mm-hmm. She was then named the head of global and consumer marketing for iTunes and Apple Music. Pretty big job. During that time, she relocated from New York to L.A. In 2016, she made a splash during the Apple Worldwide Developers Conference, where her natural charisma and energy put her in front of a bunch of journalists. One publication said she was the coolest person to ever take the stage at one of those events.
That's going some.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Getting on the map in the tech arena meant that other companies took notice, and it didn't take long for Uber to sign her up as their chief brand officer in 2017. While the job was very high profile, the company had been run like a frat house for many years, and this didn't last long. That's pretty well documented that Uber was a boys club, basically. Yep. Because of the work environment, she left Uber in 2018 to join Endeavor as their chief marketing officer. After a brief stint there, she was hired by Netflix as their chief marketing officer in 2020. She was their first Black C-level executive. This advertising executive didn't just work her way to the top. She's also been involved in philanthropy along the way. She has served on the board of Girls Who Code and Vital Voices and has been a global ambassador to Ghana for Pencils of Promise. In May of 2022, she was inducted into the American Marketing Association Marketing Hall of Fame. She was also married to Peter St. John, who she met at Pepsi, and had one daughter. She later divorced Peter, and he passed away from cancer in 2013. In 2021, she published her memoir, The Urgent Life, that details her struggles. From early life in Ghana to the boardroom at Netflix, Bozama St. John, or Boz, as she likes to be called, is a self-described badass. And I kind of tend to agree with her. In fact, she even taught a course at Harvard entitled The Anatomy of a Badass, which described how to achieve success when one feels like an outsider. If there's a more qualified person to do that, I'm not sure who it might be.
Net worth?
North of $10 million. It didn't say exactly, but chief marketing officer at Netflix, I'm sure, has done very well. Yeah.
Not bad. See, can be done.
Yep, for sure.
Cool. All right, here's a dumb question. Would you like to roll a Roth IRA over to a Roth 401k?
I'm trying to think of a scenario where that would make sense. If you can find one,
then together we'll have one.
Yeah, I could see the other way, but yes. I don't see a scenario where that would need to be done. Now, if you want to roll an IRA into a 401k, there are times that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. I have done it myself.
I have as well.
Mm-hmm. But my question was, it arises because somebody introduced it into Congress to allow that to happen. Now, I have absolutely no problem allowing things to be done, roll over here, roll over there. But I've been scratching my head on this one for a month trying to figure out why you'd want to do it.
So you would have less investment options. You would potentially higher costs. That doesn't allow you to do other things. So,
do you know what the real big one was?
No.
The real big one was very simple. 401k, even a Roth 401k, requires required minimum distributions.
Oh, yeah. So that's even you're worse off.
Right. But they've now changed that.
Okay.
Which my whole point here is you no longer have to spin your Roth out to a Roth IRA if you have a Roth 401k just to save the RMDs.
Yeah. So that's good. That should be the rule.
It's a smart law.
Yeah. I guess the only reason would be that if you wanted all your money in one place and you really like your workplace plan, sure, roll it over, whatever. If it's just a few thousand dollars and you have a giant chunk in the 401k,
yeah. Or
why not?
Another way to put that is free choice.
Yeah.
And free choice has been enacted in that regard in that you don't have to take them anymore. So just if anybody was interested about a Roth 401k, there's one less reason to do it, although there are many schools of thought on whether a Roth is worth it ever, and I certainly say you should only do it on an exception basis after planning it very well. Don't just do it on general principles, but where they really shine to me, again, back on the young people theme, young people who aren't earning anywhere near where they're going to and yet want to start saving because their tax rates are so low. Oh, I cannot think of a better reason.
I wish they had been available when I was young.
Absolutely. And then there's that other thing about how you can get your money out. if somebody is just graduating from college, for instance, and they know they want to settle down and buy a house one day, whatever, and they have a Roth going, it's the best possible way to get into that.
Yep.
You won't be penalized or taxed or anything on that.
Definitely.
But for those of you who have any interest in a Roth, there's still one rule that a lot of people don't know about, that if you want to get full benefit from the Roth, you have to have it open 5 years from the date of the first deposit. So if you are thinking ever that you want to get one going and you're qualified to make a contribution to a Roth by virtue of earned income, yours or a spouse's, get the thing open and you'll not regret it. Doesn't mean you have to contribute 5 years in a row or anything. It's just it's a ticking clock at IRS and everybody has one. There are different rules, of course, for any inherited account, and an inherited Roth is the same way. If your account is inherited, you will be subject to RMDs. But for people starting out on their own, it just got a little better. Again, I like to give credit where it was due. And I got one more, speaking of young people.
Okay.
Young Americans expect an average $320,000 inheritance. Now, what do we always say about inheritance? It is fine to plan for it. So when you are alerted that you're going to get one, you start planning for it right now. It is not ever a good idea to plan on it, because parents and other relatives have a really funny habit of spending a boatload of money before they die. So don't include it as your retirement plan basis or anything like that. But it's fine, and you should know what you're doing if you're going to get one. But here's the part I liked. A majority of young people who are expecting this money, and by majority I mean 51%, so it's slim, that they actually think now that the best use of it would be to put toward their retirement funds. I applaud them. Yep. Young people getting smarter little by little.
Yeah, they're out there.
Yep, they are indeed. It's a funny thing when you really, really look around at the millennials and so on, how normal they're starting to become. There's always exceptions.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll find you a few baby boomer exceptions, too.
Oh, for sure.
They are everywhere.
Not in Gen X, though. We're all really good.
Yeah, exactly.